Welcome to the Pittsburgh Beautiful Podcast. This is episode 6 of season 2. I'm Chris Klein, your host, and I am privileged to have Dr. Christina Tarantola on the podcast. I met Christina via LinkedIn. She was actually looking to get her new transformation coaching system out there and do some podcasts that were related to her industry and business and wellness coaching and things like that. And after doing a little research on her, I thought, you know what? She's an interesting Pittsburgh story. And that's becoming all too common these days here in Pittsburgh. And those are the kind of stories we love to tell on Pittsburgh Beautiful. So without any further ado, we're going to go right into the podcast. Dr. Christina Tarantola on the Pittsburgh Beautiful Podcast starts now. So welcome to the Pittsburgh Beautiful Podcast. I'm here with Christina Tarantola, and I said that name correctly.
Yes, you did.
And Christina has a pretty interesting story to tell. She was actually on LinkedIn, and her business, and we'll get into that in a little bit. She was looking for ways to get her business out there and podcasts and things like that. And I'm always looking for stories for Pittsburgh Beautiful. So I actually reached out to her and said, I'm not sure if you want to be on the Pittsburgh Beautiful podcast because you're looking for more of a business avenue. But it seems to me, after looking at your LinkedIn profile and some of the things you do online, that you have an interesting story to tell. And she graciously accepted. So thanks for being here, Christina. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. And yeah, I'm excited to talk about something aside from business because I feel like I've been doing that over the past 7 podcasts. So it's refreshing to have this discussion where we can just kind of talk candidly about how I got here and that whole story. So,
and I noticed, as I do a lot with some of my guests, that you have an accent that's obviously not from Pittsburgh. Of course, I accused you of having a New Jersey accent, so I apologize again for that. But you're originally from New York, right?
Yeah, I'm a Long Islander. If you couldn't tell by the way I just said that,
I can now. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I lived in Long Island for most of my life. And then I moved to Brooklyn in 2014. And I lived there, which was actually the perfect time of my life to be there because I was 25. And it was just like the sky was the limit. I lived right across the street from the Q train. And for those of you who know the New York City subway, that's the cleanest and the fastest subway. So I could go out drinking, I could do whatever I wanted and come home on the train. It was perfect. And, you know, not be bothered by any riffraff. So it was great. So how I got to Pittsburgh was that I was actually on Instagram one day, and I happened to come across another pharmacist who lived here in Wexford, actually, and we connected, and it turns out that we were both pharmacists who were interested in nutrition. So, you know, we connected, and I moved here in probably, I guess it was 8 months later. So we met, we fell in love. I moved here knowing 2 people, and it was scary.
Right. But, it's shocking too, probably.
Yeah, it was. So I feel like probably it was better that I started off in New York and then moved here because the people are way, way nicer. Uh-huh. That's nothing knocking New York people, because I'm sure there's, you know, there's plenty of nice people there too, but everybody's a little bit more open here. They're friendly. It was very welcoming. That was the first thing that I noticed when I moved here, was how welcoming people were. And even with knowing 2 people, I feel like I was welcome with open arms. Like I had started my business here, started that trajectory and growing it. And everybody was just like, oh, how can I help you? And like, let's collaborate on this. And I feel like I had tried to do that in New York, and there were some blocks that came up around that. So I felt like something opened up when I moved here. And even though the relationship didn't work out, I stayed because I felt like I just really resonate with Pennsylvania. I feel like it's very peaceful here as well. Yeah, like when I lived in Brooklyn, I lived in a really noisy apartment building, and there was a lot of noise in the hallways, and people were, you know, not so friendly. So it was nice to come here. And even, you know, we're recording at my apartment complex, and the people here are just so friendly. So there's definitely that sense of community in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And as far as New York goes, I've had this discussion with a lot of people. I mean, I'm originally from a small town in central PA named York, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I lived in Philadelphia for 5.5 years. And my extended family is from Pittsburgh. and then the DC area, that DC metro area, which is very large and very congested. And there is a difference. When I first moved to Philly, I felt like everybody was mean, but I figured it out. It was all about, let's just get to the point as quickly as possible, because I might get hit by a bus or whatever, you know. When I moved here to Pittsburgh, it was the same thing. I really only knew one or two people. And this was in 93. And I literally had to do an about face in my thinking, because the people were so friendly. They let me help you move into your apartment. I don't even know you. are you going to steal something from me? Because that's what would happen other places. So anyway, now, did you go to pharmacy school in New York?
Yeah. So I went to St. John's in Queens.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was never really that far from home, because I'm from a small town in Suffolk County called Copeg. Mm-hmm. So it's right next to the Amity Horror House. Everybody usually knows that association. So it was about like 40 minutes away. So I never really, quote unquote, went away for college. So whenever I moved here, it was a huge jump.
Right.
And, but I don't think I could have picked a better place, or God put me here for whatever reason, because I feel like I've really thrived here.
Yeah. You know? And there's an awful lot of people that I have talked to over the last few years, from the New York area, that have moved here. One of our first guests on the podcast in our first season was a travel agent who lives in New York and sends people to Pittsburgh for vacation, and they rebook every single year. And it's because it's one of those vacations that it's off the beaten path. There's a lot of history and lore surrounding Pittsburgh. But it's also a little less expensive as well if you want a long weekend during the summertime. So,
oh, for sure.
And he considers himself a Pittsburgher, and he lived here for a grand total of maybe 6 years when he was from, like, I don't know, 6 years old to 12.
So am I technically a Pittsburgher?
Well, you would have to – we consider you a Pittsburgher.
Okay, because I've been here for about 4 years, so okay. I don't know what that cutoff
well,
is.
Well, it's all about what you feel aligned with.
Yeah.
Like that's what he says. I tell people I'm from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Even though I'm originally from New York, moved to the Pittsburgh area as a kid, it just stuck with me. And now that I've lived here for 40 years back, it's a suburb north of the city, and I'm a travel agent. I tell people I'm a Steelers fan. I'm a Penguins fan. You know, it just got in me, and I can't let go of it. So maybe that'll happen to you. It sounds like maybe you're kind of halfway in between right now.
Yeah. My brother always says to me, he's like, you're a New Yorker. You're a New Yorker. Cause they, my entire family lives there still.
Yeah.
I'm like, but I really do like it here.
Yeah.
So
see, there you go.
I'm not going to go saying yins though. I don't do that yet.
That's okay. We understand. But if you're here long enough, you might not say yins, but your accent will change.
Yeah.
Mine did. I used to have what was closer to a Philly accent, because York, where I'm from, is a little closer to Philly. It's only 90 miles away or 90 minutes away. And then I lived in Philly. And when I came out here, people knew.
Yeah.
Now, when I talk to my friends from home, they tell me I sound like a Pittsburgher. Now, I don't believe that. But if I listen to myself, when I go to listen to the podcast and I edit them and I listen to myself, sometimes I hear a little bit of that coming through. So, and I'm not embarrassed by it, but I am shocked by
yeah,
it.
Yeah, own it.
So when you came to Pittsburgh, you were a pharmacist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And are you still a pharmacist, or have you've started a new business? It's kind of a health and a wellness type of thing. And I'll let you describe that maybe after the break. But when you came here as a pharmacist, that was your primary.
Yeah. So that was, I had always, been a retail pharmacist. So I've experienced, 12-hour shifts with no breaks. And, it's very stressful because you have to be literally perfect, and you have to make, you're juggling a lot. So I had my own business on the side for many years. First I was doing health coaching, and I'll explain a little bit more about what I do now, which is technically transformation coaching. But I just knew that it wasn't sustainable for me, because I am such an entrepreneur creator. So I actually quit my pharmacy job last year and went full-fledged into my business. And so here we are 10 months later, and it's doing really well. So.
Right. Right. Do you think that had you stayed in New York, do you think that you may have transitioned in this direction? That's just who you are? And do you think the barriers there, as opposed to, because there's barriers to entry to any business, whether you're male, female, whatever religion you are, whatever sexual orientation you are, there's always going to be barriers. Mm-hmm. Competition is one of them.
Yeah.
You know? So do you feel like the barriers to entry in New York may have been a little harder now, knowing what you know now?
Yeah, I feel like because I am a solopreneur, I have an assistant, I have somebody doing my finances, but you need people like who want to collaborate with you. You need people to be open to say, oh, hey, are you willing to have an event? Or, hey, are you willing to podcast? Because that's so necessary for growth. You can't just sit in your own corner and think that you can grow a business. You have to get support and get, you know, whether it's from a coach or from collaborations, whatever that is, in order to grow. You can't stay stagnant. And I feel like people who do often, you know, that can be a precursor to, you know, not doing so well. I feel like when you open yourself up to collaborating with people is when you really expand.
And do you think that maybe with just the mass of people that are in the New York area, would it be something that's easier to do here as opposed to there? Just because the feeling I get is anything in any of the large cities, you know, whether mm-hmm. it's Chicago, LA, New York, the competition is so fierce that it makes it, even though you feel like I have a much bigger audience,
yeah,
you also have a lot more critics and a lot more people that are going to say, no, we can't let her succeed. You
know, yeah, I can see that. Well, I feel like now location doesn't matter as much to me because I'm so present online, mm-hmm. but I can see where you're coming from with the barrier to entry as far as it, you know, living in New York, growing a business in New York versus here. I just feel like personally, I feel like I've done a lot better here just because of the human factor.
Right.
So.
Right. What kind of similarities do you see right now? And now I'm going more back to, you know, you grew up on Long Island. I have a very good friend who grew up in Glen Cove.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when I was living in Philly, his dad had season tickets to the Jets, and we would go up there, J-E-T-S, Jets, all the time. But that's another story for another podcast. But growing up in New York, you probably spent a lot of time in the city.
Yeah.
And you obviously saw a lot of change as you were growing up. What kind of things or similarities do you think there are between, and I know this is kind of a tough one, but, you know, Pittsburgh was at one time in the top 20 cities in the country. And I think it's top 25 now. But with this new rebirth, it's becoming more and more metropolitan-like. I like to say you can get a taste of a metropolis in Pittsburgh without having to really.
Is that all the traffic?
Right. Well, that's one thing we can talk about. Everybody in Pittsburgh says traffic. I'm like, I spent 3 hours on 95, you know, every day. But what kind of similarities are you seeing, or can you draw any similarities to what's happening in Pittsburgh now and the opportunities that you have as a person who wants to go out, say, to the theater or out to a nice restaurant or mm-hmm. something like that culturally? Are you seeing anything that you would kind of say that's kind of like New York in a way?
Yeah. So I feel like I know that a lot of new restaurants, I used to subscribe to the Pittsburgh magazine, and mm-hmm. I always saw, you know, new restaurants popping up, and even some New York chefs coming to Pittsburgh, which is really great. So I feel like, you know, Pittsburgh is definitely an up and coming city. I'm glad that there's not the traffic that is in New York because, oh my gosh,
crazy traffic.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But I can definitely see that it's evolving for sure. And I've only been here for 4 years.
Right. So yeah. You actually showed up after the change started happening. You know, when I first got here, it was the end of the basically destruction of the steel industry. And people actually asked me, they were nice, like I said earlier in the podcast, but they would say, well, where are you here from? And I'd say, well, I moved here from Philly. And they'd say, why? And I'd be like, why does everybody keep asking me why I moved here? I don't get it. But now I started Pittsburgh Beautiful about 10 years ago, and it's really grown in the last 4.5 years. I think because of part of the renaissance here is that people are starting to become proud of the area,
mm-hmm.
and they want to share what they think is beautiful. One of the chefs that you're talking about, or one of the restaurateurs, I think is a guy named John Valentine, who's now the director of the Pittsburgh CDC. And they sponsor Pittsburgh Fashion Week and all that. And he was on the podcast last season. He was born in Philly, moved to New York, lived most of his life there, came to Pittsburgh State. So we have a lot of those stories.
Yeah. Wow.
Around. So in the second part of the podcast, after we take a break here, what I want to do is I want to get into the business you're in now. how you ended up choosing this business, why you feel that Pittsburgh maybe is the place to help it grow. And then I'm going to ask you some questions about maybe some Pittsburgh food versus New York food, stuff like that. So we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Okay, so we're back after a short break. And Christina was telling us earlier about living in Long Island. And I don't know if I said that right or not. But
perfect.
And then the Bronx or Brooklyn.
It was Brooklyn.
And sorry, I probably insulted you when I said that too. And then moving here to Pittsburgh as a pharmacist, and you are no longer a pharmacist. You are a transformation coach.
Yep.
Okay. So help me work that out. So you, as a pharmacist, what I see is, and I know it's more complicated than this, but you're counting pills, right? You're every day, it's like prescription, count the pills, all the chemistry that you have to know and all that stuff.
Yeah.
How do you go from that to being a transformation coach?
Yeah. So it actually started with my own transformation. So I had two different eating disorders, like as I was growing up. So from 14 to 18 and then from 18 to 25. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I went through my own challenges of repeating these same cycles over and over again and sabotaging my health and never getting to heal. I never, you know, healed myself from it. So one day I remember, I think I was 21, I just randomly had this intuition, like you should go try hypnosis, because I had gone to all these different therapies and nothing worked. So I went to this hypnotist in New York City, his name's Doug O'Brien. And from on a scale of 1 to 10, it went from a 10 to a 2. It was really quick. So I became interested in transformation in my early 20s, but I was still kind of caught up in like, this is what I need to do because this is what I'm going to school for as far as pharmacy.
Right.
But as I was going throughout my 20s, I realized how potent it is to look at the subconscious mind. And so that's what I really help people with now. A lot of entrepreneurs who are wanting to maybe grow their business, or maybe they want to write a book or be a speaker, whatever that outcome is. And they're only using 5% of their conscious mind when 95% is really running the show. So your subconscious is everything from your intuition to your belief system to the traumas that happen to you early in life, and all about your emotions, like everything below the surface. So if you're not addressing that, say for example, if somebody wants to grow in their business, but they have a deep core sense of unworthiness, those two things don't match up. So right. I always tell people to think of like, if you're in a kayak and one oar is going this way, that's the conscious mind, and the other one's going this way and it's the unconscious, you're going to get stuck. You need both of those oars to be moving together. So your conscious mind and your subconscious need to be on board to move you forward in whatever that goal is. So that's like the global version of what I do, but it's really helping people to heal a lot of these things that hold them back so that they can get to whatever goal that is.
So you're working as a pharmacist here in Pittsburgh, and your subconscious and conscious mind are now starting to pull you in this direction, or push you in this direction of, you know, this is really what I'm passionate about. I was able to utilize these skills and things to help myself.
Yeah.
And now I want to try to use those to help others. Mm-hmm. Now, do you focus on women entrepreneurs in business, or is it any entrepreneur? I mean, is there a certain section? Because a lot of the podcasts we've done recently, I've focused a lot on women who are entrepreneurs in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Because I feel like right now there's an explosion of that going on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my mother was not an entrepreneur, but she was.
Isn't she a nurse?
She was the director of a drug social and alcohol worker. Facility. Yeah. She was a social worker, but she was in a position of power for many years. And she gave an awful lot, and she probably could have been an entrepreneur, but that wasn't the thing to do in the 1970s, especially as a woman. So do you focus on that segment more than you do, say, on just general entrepreneurs, or are you kind of open to everybody?
Yeah. So I focus really with women, no offense guys, but I just feel like women are way more open to this type of work. Mm-hmm. I've hypnotized men before and the results are not as strong because it depends on your level of resistance and also your belief in it. Right. Because if you're not open to it, then how is it going to work? So I feel like women just naturally are my target demographic.
Yeah. Yeah. And what kind of progress have you made in getting the word out there that this is what you do? Or maybe we should go back to when you're being pulled out of the pharmacy thing. How did you get yourself started? What put you over the edge where you said, okay, I'm jumping off now, and this is what it's going to be?
So honestly, it was just my mental health, and I did not want to be working 12-hour shifts back to back with no breaks and no fulfillment. You know, I feel like, yeah, I can do it. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a job I can do, but was it really helping people? Right. Yeah, I'm giving pills to people, but is it really helping them heal?
Right.
So I feel like there's that tie that, yeah, I can do this, but, you know, I'm helping people in a totally different way now. So mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, it's just way more fulfilling to me. And I feel like what I want to tell people who are listening is, the way that, you know, you might be saying like, oh, well, how do I know that this is in my subconscious or whatever you want to call it? How do I know that there's something else pulling me to this other direction? I invite you to tap into your feeling around it. Is it something that's been in your mind or on your mind for a long time, but you maybe fear is holding you back or whatever that is? I feel like, of course, that's natural. It's going to be there because it's whenever you're stretching your comfort zone, mm-hmm. these fears come up, and that's totally normal. But I invite you to follow your intuition around what is it that maybe will give you fulfillment or that's pulling you. And usually it's like a subtle whisper. Usually the inner critic is a lot louder, like, oh, but what if it fails? And, you know, I right. can't do this or whatever. That's really loud. But if you really sit and you can listen to that whisper, it's there. So that's what I always say to people.
Yeah. And I think you're right about that. There's a lot of things that we tie to happiness and being at peace with yourself. And I think too often, most people, myself included, will tie your success to money.
Yeah.
That's so easy to do because money allows you to enjoy luxuries that maybe other people can't enjoy or, you know, and stuff like that. But what happens over time is you're kind of programmed that you're going to be miserable if you don't have any money. And there's going to be a lot of people that listen to this and say, you know, that's not true. Or you know, there's going to be a lot of people that say, yeah, I get it totally.
Uh-huh.
But it's really more about your happiness and what gives you joy. And if you have a passion about it, the money will come.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and the money will rise to the level that you need to be happy. And for somebody that could be, you know, a minimal amount of money, but they're happy. They're passionate about what they're doing. They love their job, their family, and I'm good.
Yeah.
And to other people like Jeff Bezos, you know, it's every last dollar printed from here on.
In billions.
No offense meant to Jeff. I love Amazon, but I think that's really interesting. You mentioned self-sabotage.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now that I do that on a regular basis. You know, I did it right before I came up here, and my wife said, make sure you take that pizza out of the car. I left it in the car and put it in the fridge. And I decided, well, I'll might as well have a pizza while I'm walking up to the fridge. And then I'm going to get home later tonight and say, I'm really fat, honey. I need to lose weight. And she's going to say, well, that extra piece of pizza didn't happen. That's a form of self-sabotage.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It's probably a very simple form of self-sabotage. But when it comes to business, I think, and just being happy, I think that happens a lot. So can you give me some examples of that?
Yeah. So I would say one of the main ones is procrastination or avoidance. So a lot of people will say that they want to start a business or they want to do a podcast or whatever that is, and they'll start it, but then they'll get distracted with their kids or life gets in the way, or maybe it's an internal thing of, like I said, it can be anything, fear of being seen, fear of failure. All of these subtle things are at play underneath the surface, and we're not always conscious of it. So it's easy to pin it on something else, like, oh, well, yeah, I have to go to little Johnny's baseball game, or I have to mow the lawn today.
Right, and I can't edit the podcast.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why having a coach there to help you, you know, see the things that you can't see for yourself. You know, if you're thinking about, like, you know, if you're driving a car and you can't see your blind spot, it's the same with coaching. Like, you can't see what's blocking you all the time. So that's the value of having someone like me who can help you see, oh, okay, this is what's operating right now. Let's, you know, do some techniques to release this so you can move forward with whatever it is.
And how do you identify those blind spots? I mean, is it something where their hypnosis is involved up front, or is it, I might dumb it down by saying, is it like a basic questionnaire and an interview? I mean, what kind of signals do you look for to identify that?
So yeah, that's a great question. So my biggest gift is my intuition. So I can literally talk to somebody. I talked to somebody last week, a potential client, and within 2 minutes I was like, I diagnosed it. I'm like, this is what's happening. It was a lack. There was a scarcity program running, and I said, you're not trusting. I said, it's permeating your whole life. She, you know, wasn't trusting the finances and like other aspects. And she was just stunned. She couldn't believe that I diagnosed it so quickly. But for me, I guess, cause I've been doing this for so long and, you know, with health coaching and different things, I've seen people have patterns and people have, you know, ways that they numb out or, you know, they procrastinate or they avoid things. So for me, it's easy to see, all right, like this is what's happening with you.
Right.
So,
right. So it's some verbal signals, maybe some visual signals,
even the tone of their voice. Right. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. When do you get to the point, or, I mean, maybe you don't for some people, but it, just something I thought of, when do you get to the point where you say, hypnosis is something that should be, do you call it treatment or just coaching in general?
It's a transformation tool, okay. I guess.
Do you get to the point where you would use that as a tool? Does it ever become a primary tool?
Yeah, I feel like, so with each person that I've coached, I feel like that's one of the strongest techniques that I use, because it's helping the person to essentially reroute these old belief systems. So for example, if they have the belief that like money, I have to work really hard to get money. It's like when you drive to work the same day, you're the same way every day, you're creating ruts in your subconscious mind to where it's like, all right, I just go there without even, that's why it's a habit, right?
Right.
Because it's just something that you do. So it's about rerouting that. Okay, let's try this way. Let's have a different association with it. And that's how I work with people to help them overcome some of these limiting beliefs, barriers, what have
you. It's interesting to think of it in that way when you talk about driving to work, because how many times are you driving somewhere and you either A, pass up where you were supposed to turn, or sometimes I do this a lot. I will literally from my house in Monroeville, the turnpike entrance is very close by.
Yeah.
And I might be going somewhere else, but I automatically get on the turnpike because it's something we talked about off podcast. I drive the turnpike all the time.
Yeah.
But I'm stuck in that rut and I really need to make a left, but I'm thinking about something. I just get on the turnpike and I notice, you know, it doesn't happen every week, but you know, a couple times a year, I'll notice all of a sudden I'll be like, why am I on the turnpike?
Yeah.
So you can, I think you can draw a correlation between just that normal mental activity and maybe how you treat, you know, things in your life that maybe are challenges that you need to overcome and you keep getting stuck.
Yeah,
you know, it's in that rut.
And typically the same thoughts and the same emotions are happening on a weekly basis for people. So they wake up in the morning, they're anxious, they're stressed out, they're contracted in their energy, and they go and, you know, sabotage in some way, whatever that is for them. So I feel like when you're able to help that person break that loop through, you know, different techniques, that's when you can help them create a new reality. Because if we're trying to, you know, make more money or lose weight or whatever it is, and you're operating from the same thought and emotion and feeling and habit, then you're not going to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. So it's really looking at all of those pieces.
And it does take somebody on the outside a lot to sometimes to somebody that you trust to say, you know, look, this is what you're doing. And then, and it is quite amazing when somebody points that out to you, it's almost as if you knew it all along.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, yeah, well, I kind of knew that. And then you're like, but wait a minute, I guess I did know that you know, kind of thing. And
and
we all have those kind of barriers. And when you talk about podcasting and things, something that's near and dear to my heart, one of those barriers is, well, only 100 people listened to it this week. You know, that's one of those things where if you're out there and you're listening and you want to start a podcast, you have to expect that unless, you know, you have some large media conglomerate behind you, you know, the first few episodes might only be your friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're enjoying it, don't let that hold you back.
Right.
You have to just keep, you know, finding more interesting people to talk to, more interesting things to talk about, you know, keep it on brand, but just keep plugging away and building that audience. And
exactly.
That's the same thing. So where can, what do you call your business? Where can we find it online, social media?
Yeah. So it's it was called Enlightened Wellness Solutions, but I have transitioned to Dr. Christina Transformation Coaching. So you can find that on Facebook. You can friend me on Instagram under drchristina.tarantola. And I think you'll be putting the spelling of my name in the show notes.
Yeah, I will.
Or you can go to my website at www.enlightenedwellnesspa.com.
Great. I appreciate it. Now, a couple really, really hard questions.
What's your favorite food?
There you go.
I knew it. See?
See, it's that hypnosis. Yeah. What favorite Pittsburgh food?
Yes, I knew you were going to ask me that. So I love the Pittsburgh salad, which is just everything in there and fries.
Right, right.
We never had that in New York.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. That, you know, it's funny. The Permane sandwich, the Pittsburgh salad with the French fries on it. I never saw that either until I moved here.
Yeah.
And it blows my mind after all these years, because I'm like a closet foodie. And so if you're what they would consider a foodie, French fries and a salad are an absolute no-no. As a matter of fact, salads in the traditional way are a no-no. It's got
really
to be a special salad.
There are rules.
Yeah. We won't go into them here, but so I feel the same way, though. I remember the first time I had a Permane sandwich when I was in Pittsburgh, and we went down to Permane's in the Strip District, and it was late at night, and I had two of them. They were so good. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, it was late at night. I had about a bazillion drinks, and I probably could have eaten kitty litter, and it would have tasted good at that time. This can't be right. But then a few weeks later, it's in the middle of the day, and I had one during the day, and it tasted just as good. So what do you think is – what's your favorite thing about everything that's Pittsburgh? What's the best thing to you about Pittsburgh?
Oh, the parking. That you don't have to worry about your car getting towed.
First time. That's the first time I've heard
that. Oh, my God.
I love it.
And the people.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. That the people is what everybody says. But I love your answer because that was like right off the cuff, the parking, which I think is hilarious, because you're right. I mean, I've always looked at it from a traffic standpoint. Like there's no such thing as traffic here. Traffic is an extra 20 minutes out of your way.
Yeah.
You know, whereas when you're from a city like New York or where I lived in Philly, traffic is like, it's an extra hour and a half.
Easily.
Yeah. No matter how I cut it, no matter which back road I take, it's going to be an extra hour.
Yeah.
So, and at this point right now, do you see yourself staying here for a while? I think you just got engaged.
Yeah. Right? My fiance's here, so I guess I better stay. Thank you.
Yeah. You see yourself being here long-term?
Yeah.
Now, we're not going to make you listen to this 20 years from now when you're living in Idaho. So
yeah. That's a random state.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm going to stay.
Okay. Yep. Good. Well, I want to thank you for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
And, thank you.
You're welcome. And thanks for telling your story, and maybe we can have you back in a little
bit. I would
bit.
Love that. Yep. Thank
right.
you.
Thanks, Christina. Another great story on the Pittsburgh Beautiful podcast. I want to thank Dr. Christina Tarantola for being our guest, and I wish her all the luck in the world. She's recently engaged. Congratulations. You can find her online and her coaching programs at enlightenedwellnessspa.com. She's Dr. Christina Tarantola all over social media. Make sure you follow her, subscribe to her YouTube channel. What an incredible Pittsburgh story. Growing up in Long Island, coming to Pittsburgh, and choosing to stay here and transform herself and help transform the lives of others. She's a part of that generation who sees a renewed Pittsburgh and a renewed sense of energy. So our hats are off to everybody that does that, and especially Dr. Christina for being a part of the podcast. Thanks for listening. You can find us everywhere. Make sure you ask Alexa to play this Pittsburgh Beautiful podcast and Pittsburgh Beautiful online all over the world. Stay real.